Parshas Chukas, Tafshin Samach Zayin. So today we have a few orders of business. Number one, analyzing the story of the Mei Meriva, where Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. First question, is this a case, a disappointing case of a failure of Moshe's leadership at the very end of his tenure as the greatest teacher, prophet, king we ever had, that he gets angry and he hits the rock? After all these years of begging for forgiveness for the Jewish people, of being patient, of being humble, here at the very end, the 40th year, just when they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, he can't take it anymore, and that's it? Is that what we're seeing here? Or is there something more going on? Number two. What is the difference? There are so many questions, let's start this way, regarding the story of the hitting of the rock. We will deal with many of the questions. But one of the main questions we need to deal with today is, what is the big difference between speaking to a rock and hitting a rock? Both are miracles of the highest order. We want to understand the difference, the concept, and the blame HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts upon Moshe and Aaron, where he says, you didn't trust me, you didn't have emun in me to be mekadesh me, to sanctify me. What was Moshe's sin? By the way, many of the Mefarshim are in disagreement as to the sin. It ranges from running to Ohel Moed and not begging for forgiveness, to hitting the rock, to calling them rebellious people. There's so many choices here you can choose from as to what particularly was the sin. But what we want to focus on is the difference between hitting and speaking. We also want to focus on something not philosophical and theoretical, but what we're going to pay attention to this week, because it's so easy with our subject matter, is how significant every word of the Torah is, every reference, every insinuation. These are perfect psukim, the psukim of the hitting of the rock, the sin of the Jewish people here, complaining about the lack of water, and Moshe's response. These are perfect psukim to help us see how the Torah writes, the technique of the Torah, how often words and letters insinuate, bring into focus all kinds of other ideas that a person who is learned, a person who knows the whole Torah, will immediately make associations between the words here and other words and other phrases and other concepts from other places. Okay, the Torah is drawing on patterns. So what we're going to do here is begin to analyze the story of the response of the Jewish people to Miriam's death and the loss of the Be'er. Okay, so firstly, turn to Parshas Chukas, which you probably have. And turn to Perek Chaf. Okay, we're going to carefully look at these words. B'nai Yisrael now come to Midbar Tzin. Now, when are we? What is the setting? Where are we? What year are we in? So we just spent there's been a break between the end of Parshas Korach and the beginning of Parshas Chukas. 38 years have passed. And the last 38 years have been spent in the Midbar, seemingly without any issues, without any problems. Nothing is recorded about the events of the 38 years that have just passed. The last uprising was that of Korach. You remember the story of Korach. By the end of the story of Korach, it became established that every word that Moshe said was al pi hadibur, was dictated to him, was spoken to him by Hashem. He took no action on his own. Right? You remember this? With Korach believed that he took action on his own. With choosing Aaron, he took no action on his own. This was established. His authority was secure by the end of last parsha. Furthermore, the people had argued that the whole Shevet Levi didn't deserve the kavod of their special status, and by the flowering of Aaron's staff, this is a very significant idea. We must remember that after the whole story of Parshas Korach, the people continued to complain. And in order to establish that it was true that Shevet Levi had been designated for the special avoda by Hashem, Hashem asked all the Shvatim to present a staff. All the staffs were put together in Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the one that would flower would be the one of the Shevet that was called upon by Hashem to be designated for a special role. And it was Aaron's staff that that flowered. Correct? Do you remember this? In fact, let's look at it for 1 second here because it becomes very important. Okay, if you turn back to if you turn back in Parshas Korah, page 830. Okay, if you quickly read, you'll see that everybody gave a staff, 12 staff, Aaron included. Moshe put them all before Hashem. Behold, the staff of Aaron had blossomed. It had blossomed an almond, a shaked. So Moshe brought out all the staffs, and everybody took it. And Hashem said to Moshe, now take that matah of Aaron and bring it back into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is Lifnei HaEdus, in front of the Edus, the testimony. What is the testimony? It's the Aaron with the Luchos. That's called the testimony, the Edus, the Aaron HaEdus. Take that staff back, bring it back into the Kodesh HaKadoshim by the Aaron, and leave it there. Why would the staff be left there? L'mishmeres. It will be left there for safekeeping, always as a sign, Lebnei Meri, for the Jewish people when they start becoming rebellious. You take out this staff and you'll show it to them and remind them that everything that you've said and you've done is Al Pi HaDibor. And then they'll remember that and their complaints will subside, but Vatachal Tulunasam Me'alai, they will cease complaining and they will not die. So here they are, 38 years later. Perhaps there were some incidents, some uprisings that just started to ferment, and Moshe would take out the staff, show it to them, and everybody would calm down and remember that Moshe was the chosen leader and every word he said was legitimate. And now we stand in the 40th year. So these people, Rashi informs us immediately, Yavo b'nei Yisrael, kol ha'eda, the whole eda, Rashi tells us, that the words kol ha'eda are here to teach us. Eda hashlema, the whole and complete eda shekvar metu, everyone who already was meant to die in the midbar had already died, and these ve'elu pershu l'chaim, these are designated for life. This is the eda that was going to go into Eretz Yisrael. So here we are, and they're standing in midbar tzin, and by Yeshev Ha'am beKadesh, and they settled in Kadesh. Now, if everybody had finished dying, and everybody that was alive knew that obviously the Gezerah of the Meraglim was over, all those that were meant to die had passed on. They had done their tikkun, obviously, for the Chet HaMeraglim. So obviously now they're about to go in. Now finally the new generation can proceed forward. And they start to travel. And they travel and they come to Kadesh. Now Kadesh is right on the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael. It's a little north of the Yam HaMelech on the east side, right on the border over the Jordan. So here they come and here they rest. The Anan stops here. They realize that this is the designated place for them to rest. Vatamasha Miriam, and then Miriam dies, and she's buried there. V'lo hayamayim la'eda, and there was no water for the people. Now, why was there no water for the people? Well, because Miriam died. Now, carefully here. What would the people think about the fact that Miriam dies and there's no more water? Imagine we were there. We're standing in Kadesh. Now notice this. Some of Farshim point out they weren't sure whether Kadesh, where they were standing in, where they had actually come to the border of Eretz Yisrael or not. Maybe they were there. Maybe they were in Eretz Yisrael now. Maybe they had come to the first, taken their first steps into Eretz Yisrael. And all of a sudden there's no water. But unlike the first episode, when they first came out of Mitzrayim, when there was no water, when the Torah specifically tells us that they were thirsting for water, men, women, and children, babies, and old people, and animals, and everyone was dying of thirst for 3 days, and they needed water, and there was no water, unlike that incident, it doesn't tell us here that they were hungry or thirsty at all. It just says, Lo hayamayim la'eda, there was no water for the Eda, because Miriam had died. Perhaps from their complaint, we can see what went on in their heads. What was it? Was it thirst or was it anxiety? Was it fear and panic? Doesn't seem to have been thirst. So they all gather on Moshe and Aaron, and they began to complain. Vayarev, making a quarrel. Vayarev, they said, Lu gavanu begava achenu lefnei Hashem. We should have died as our brethren died, lifnei Hashem. Because the words lifnei Hashem always imply a very high madrega. When someone is considered lifnei Hashem, before God, either in life or in death, that's a high compliment. Lifnei Hashem means in the presence of God. And so they felt that those who died in the Midbar had merited something that they were not going to merit. They at least had died by the hand of Hashem. They had a known reason for their death. They died because of the crying from the Meraglim, but they died righteous, lifnei Hashem. Whereas these people seem to be afraid that they're not dying for any reason that can be associated with righteousness or merit, but some other reason they're going to die here now. So then they say, why did you bring Kahal Hashem to this Midbar to die here, us and our animals? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? And this is the new door that was born in the Midbar. So they're not crazy people. They just lived 38 years with the Anane HaKavod, with the Mon, with the miracles of the well. We're not dealing with Mishugayim. So what is this complaint? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim to bring us to this bad place, the Lo Makom Zera? And guess what? It's not a place of Te'ena, Gefen, Rimon, which are, of course, the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. And there's no water to drink. Moshe and Aaron don't respond, and they run to Pesach HaOl Moed. They fall on their faces, and the Kavod Hashem appears to them. What is going on here? What is the complaints? So it seems to be, based on extrapolating from what they said, that firstly, it's possible that they believed this was Eretz Yisrael, and instead of being a place that was bursting with the most delicious fruits and species, it was a Midbar. Now, why would Hashem bring them to a Midbar and not Eretz Yisrael, or at least the most God-forsaken, so to speak, part of Eretz Yisrael, where there was nothing there? In other words, they knew they were heading to Eretz Yisrael, and this didn't look like it. It was a Midbar, and here they're going to die because there's no more water. So what was the point of taking them out of the shrine? What was in their heads? So Miriam has died, and there's no bear. So the people become afraid. Why do they become afraid? How logical is it to take away Miriam, the source of their life, at this point now, right at the end, right as they're entering into Eretz Yisrael? Could it be that she didn't deserve to go into Eretz Yisrael? No, that couldn't be. She had no sin. The one sin she had done 38 years earlier, she had received her kapara already. She had saras, and everybody waited for her. There was no blemish on Miriam. Why would a Kadosh Baruch Hu take away Miriam now? The tzaddik, the tzaddikas, the tzaddika that they all relied on, that was the source of their mayim chayim, their water, why is she being taken away from them? It must not be any fault of hers. And at the same time, they're coming to a midbar. So they begin to be afraid that perhaps they no longer have any merits. Perhaps they're not as great as their parents who came out of Mitzrayim. And Hashem has taken away Miriam because they no longer deserve her and her merits and her be'er. And He's brought them to a midbar because they don't deserve to come into Eretz Yisrael. Hashem is removing His Ashgacha from them. Something went wrong. They're not sure what. But all things indicate that they've been abandoned. This isn't Eretz Yisrael, or if it is, it's not Eretz Yisrael that was described. It's a midbar. So, and here they are. The Anan stops here. Why are they stopping here? Miriam is taken away. There's no war. They're not thirsty. The Torah doesn't tell us they're thirsty. They're terrified. They're terrified, and because of their terror, they start to quarrel. Most sin, most self-destructive behavior, does not come from a point of strength, confidence, and happiness, and a sense of fulfillment and being and bracha. Most self-destructive behavior comes when people feel depressed, hopeless, uncared for, incapable of achieving their goals. That's why people unravel and degenerate even as people, because not because they feel so good about themselves, they're so confident, they're gonna show God that they don't care, because they feel the future is slipping out of their hands. They have no ability to achieve what they want to achieve, and the negativity and the depression destroys them. And this is a classic case of Klal Yisrael facing a situation which to them looks like they've been abandoned. So Moshe doesn't say anything, but he goes to Ohel Moed. Now here's what Hashem tells Moshe. And as we said in the beginning, with simply reading this, without any background, without any knowledge of Moshe and Aaron, without any knowledge of previous episodes in the Torah, only in that way can a person read this and call this a failure of leadership. Okay? But anyone who studies carefully must see something more going on. So Hashem says to Moshe, Kach es hamateh, go and take the mateh and gather the edah. And edah is the word for, as Rashi says, the whole edah, the edah that is sholem, that is ra'oi to go into Eretz Yisrael. They are ra'oi to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? The edah says. This is showing him the zechus of Klal Yisrael. Explaining to him this Eda is ra'oi. Ata v'aron achicha, you and Aaron, v'dibartem el hasela, speak to the rock, le'enehem, before them, v'nasan meimav, and it will give out its water, v'hotseso lehem mayim min hasela. Now these are redundant, these are extra words, be careful here, they serve a purpose. The Torah just said it will give off its water. You speak to it and the water will flow. So we need to know carefully what is the purpose of the next few words. V'hoseisa lehem mayim min hasela, and you will bring out for them water from the rock. Critical words, but not easily, not obviously understandable. And then v'hishkisa es ha'eda, you will give them to drink. V'hishkisa is like when a mother holds a cup for a child and gives the child water. It implies that Moshe will cause them to drink. He will feed them, so to speak. He will water them. It's also important. And not only them, the Esbeiram and their animals. So let's see how Moshe follows the rules. Vayikach Moshe es hamata milifnei Hashem. Moshe went and got the mata, which was before Hashem. So which mata did Moshe go and take? Not the matah that he did the osos and the mofsim with. So this is critical. Not his matah that he split the sea with and brought the makos on Mitzrayim. The matah that's sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Aaron's matah, that is has a specific function, which is what? To hold up, in such a case, os libnei meri, as a sign for the Jewish people when they start to get, you know, agitate against something, hold it up, and Mahashem made a promise. Their accusations, their complaints will cease. That's what we just read in the previous parsha. V'tachal tulu nasam, and their arguments will die down. Just show it to them, and you can trust these people. They know, they've been through a lot. Remind them with the mateh, and everything will be okay. That's all you have to do. Moshe goes, and he takes the matah, milifnei Hashem, out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, kasher tzivahu, as he was commanded. My grandfather, by the way, these ideas all come from my grandfather you'll hear today. Up till now, he does what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him to. But then something goes awry. V'yikalu Moshe v'Aaron es hakol, al pnei hasela, they gather them all in front of the rock. Now don't think rock, think mountain range. Somehow when they traveled, they were nearby a mountain range and the water would flow from within the mountain, and now the pi ha'be'er, the mouth, closed up There was water in there somewhere, but without Miriam, they couldn't get to it. They couldn't access the water, the Mayim Chayim, and they needed Moshe to find the spot, so to speak, in the mountain that would be the opening to the well. So he gathers them in front of the rock, and then he says, Shimu na hamorim. Listen here, you rebellious ones. Why would Moshe say this? Because he's holding in his hands Os Libnei Meri, the sign, as it is called in Korach, for the children of rebellion. He's holding the matzah, which is called Os Libnei Meri, a sign for the people when they become rebellious. So he's holding it. So he says to them, Shimuna, now hear, you Morim, you why do you think I had to take this staff? Because you're being Bnei Meri. See what you're doing? So he's holding the staff, and he says to them, this is the purpose of the staff. You are being morim. You are rebelling. And he says, Hamin hasela hazeh notzi lachem mayim. Shall we bring forth, me and Aaron, water for you from this rock? What is that question? What is the point of the question? Is he encouraging them to doubt that Hashem can use Moshe to bring water out of the rock? What is he trying to tell them? Hamin hasela hazeh, do you think we're going to bring water out of this rock for you? What, the whole statement is incomprehensible. What is he trying to say? Think. You can't even think what he's trying to say. You say, you don't deserve that I should bring water out of the rock, but to say, shall we bring water from this rock seems to imply that we can't. What does it mean? That Moshe and Aaron have no ability as messengers anymore? That their power of doing Nisim has ended? What is Moshe trying to say? So then, Vayare Moshe's Yado, Moshe lifts up his hand, and he does bring water out of the rock. Vayach es hasela, he hits the rock, pa'amayim, two times. Why twice? Why did he hit it? What was this preamble about? Shall we bring water from the rock? Hit, and water comes out of the rock. But here are the critical words. Vayetsu mayim rabim. Now, vayetsu mayim rabim, look back. What did Hashem promise him? Hashem promised him, v'nasan meimav, it will give water. And then Hashem gave them a command, a directive. There was something they needed to do. And that was Vahotzei Solahem Mayim Min Hasela. You shall bring out for them water from the rock. So here it says he hit it. Vayetsu Mayim Rabim. A lot of water came out. Did Moshe bring out water from them? Whatever that means, seems not. He hit the rock, and the first part took place. Vanasan Meimav, it will give its water. So Vayetsu Mayim Rabim. A lot of water came out. The rock did its job. But Moshe was supposed to do something called bringing out water from the rock in addition to the water releasing its water. You see this little nuance? And that they didn't do. The rock did release its water, as was predicted, as Hashem promised. But Moshe was supposed to get involved there somewhere and bring out water, and that he didn't do. Furthermore, he was commanded, Vishkisa es ha'eda, you will give them to drink, pause, the espiram, and their animals to drink. Did Moshe give them to drink? Look at the end of Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vatesh ta'eda ubi'iram, and the people and their animals drank. Moshe didn't get involved with giving them to drink. Also, notice there's no ve'es between the eda and their animals here. You see that? Mm-hmm. What happens here? Well, it's hard to know what happened without analyzing Hashem's response. But when we read the Pasuk about Hashem's response, it doesn't seem to fit at all to the event. So what Hashem blames them for is, Ya'an lo he'emantem bi, you didn't have emunah in me, to sanctify me, l'hakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, before the eyes of b'nei Yisrael. Therefore, you will not bring them into Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, does the punishment fit the crime? You're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael because you didn't have emunah in me to be mekadesh me, to elevate me and sanctify me. So where is the sin? So there are no less than, well, for sure 15, probably more mefarshim that try to identify the sin. Where was the lack of emunah? Some say he he ran to Ohel Moed and didn't daven for Klal Yisrael, but that doesn't sound like a lack of emunah. Some say that he called them B'nai Meri, but that doesn't sound like a lack of emunah. Some say he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, but that doesn't sound like a lack of emunah. Some say when he said Hanotzi Lachemaim, could we bring out water? Okay, that sounds like a lack of emunah. But then a baby wouldn't make this mistake. A 5-year-old wouldn't make this mistake to not trust Hashem after all these years and say, can we really bring out water? And you didn't sanctify me. You didn't make me more kadosh. That's critical. We have learned, we know that kedusha is always associated with removal, with transcendence, with being less tangible, less accessible. Parush, when we talk about kedusha or prisha, something more removed, more in the realm, not of the five senses and the physical, but in the realm of the ruchnius and the seichel and the machshava. Everything parush is restrained and removed from the immediate, correct? So you could have created a reality that was kedusha, that was removed, and yet you didn't do that. The approach that we're going to take to try to make sense of all of this is my grandfather Schwab's approach. Careful reading and a sensitivity to the words and the nuances here. And after I once taught this, and someone who knew my grandfather well said only a leader of people who experienced what real leadership is could have understood this chait in this way. Here was the Eida standing ready to go in Eretz Yisrael. And they have a flaw. Their flaw is they don't feel meritorious enough to deserve to anything more. The Miriam's dying for no reason. When a tzaddik is taken away from a generation that needs that tzaddik desperately, what's the point? It can't be that the tzaddik is unworthy. Maybe the generation is unworthy, right? Someone with great potential and capability to elevate the people, and that person is taken away. So what does that mean for us? So here's Miriam is taken away for no reason, right before they're going to Eretz Yisrael. They don't have the Mayim Chayim, which is means to say God is, I don't know, doesn't want him anymore, and hasn't brought them to Eretz Yisrael like he promised. They're feeling hopeless. Now this is an Avera. It's an Avera. They, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we learned about this in all those years in the Midbar. Hashem pushed Klal Yisrael continuously, on a regular basis. He pushed them to the edge, demanding the highest level of emunah in the face of incomprehensible realities. The man, they never had a piece of man. Remember we talked about this? For the next morning. They had to rely on a nace that it would fall again. Every time in the beginning when they first came out of Egypt, remember that whole, they would have 3 days, we're talking about millions of people with no water until they're about to die, and then an ace would happen. Continuously pushing them to the edge of trust, of emunah, building it. We spoke about this, the omen, the period of nursing, building emunah. So here the same thing, no water, Miriam dies, it's a midbar, it's not Eretz Yisrael, they're supposed to have emunah. And it was hard. We're talking about levels that Hashem is expecting from people, which are beyond 99.9% of the human beings' capabilities. So they took it as a sense of their failure. They didn't see it as a challenge to emunah. They felt it as their lack of merit. This was their sin. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to teach them, A, that they were meritorious, and to teach them even, push them even further in emunah. Even further. Now, so he says to Moshe, go and get the matah. And you're going to hold it up to them. Now, Hashem had made a promise that when they see that matah, they'll come to their senses. So what Moshe was expected to do, and this helps us understand you didn't have trust in me, Moshe was expected to have faith in Klal Yisrael, that when they would see the Os Libnei Meri, they would get together, talk it out, reconsider, and back down, and wait for water. Trusting in Hashem, and wait for the instructions about when they would enter Eretz Yisrael, and just be patient and just wait for Hashem to do the nisim that would be called for now to extract them from this situation. Moshe was supposed to hold up the matah, and Moshe was supposed to have confidence in Klal Yisrael that they would reconsider. But Moshe seems to not have had that trust in Klal Yisrael. Moshe was afraid. Why didn't Moshe trust Klal Yisrael? Because Hashem said to him, you're going to talk to the rock, and we'll get to the talking soon, and it will give its water. Now, you know what you're going to do, Moshe? You're going to make them drink. V'hishkisa es ha'am. You will cause them to drink. Immediately, the red light started flashing, the warning signs in Moshe's mind. Why would he have to give them to drink? There were only two other incidents that we ever know of where somebody is compelled to drink by someone else. Sota, which will, that water that the Kohen gives her to drink, will distinguish, will determine, rather, whether she's righteous or guilty. That water will determine, will basically announce, will make it clear who she is, innocent or guilty. There's another time Moshe had to give the people to drink, Moshe himself. And it's just like Sota. It's just like a case where a woman betrays her husband and is suspected of zinus by the egel. By the egel, which is compared to zinus, Avodah Zarah is always compared to betraying our spouse, Hashem. Moshe had to give them to drink. For what purpose? The water would enter them and distinguish between Tzadik and Rishayim. What would happen to the Rishayim? They wouldn't make it. They would die right then and there. And not in a pleasant kind of fashion either. So when Moshe hears, you speak to the rock, and it will give its water. But that's not Moshe's job. Then you will take the water, and you will cause them to drink. You will have a whole system in place where there will be surveillance, and they will be forced to drink. Moshe immediately makes an assumption that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do now is what Hashem has done many times before, which is made a division between those who are righteous and those who are wicked. And what will happen to the guilty ones? They're going to die. And will they enter Eretz Yisrael? No. So standing here on the brink of entering Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden, Moshe is asked to again create a selection between the tzaddikim and the rishayim. And the rishayim will die, and the tzaddikim will continue in Eretz Yisrael. But this Ada was the Ada that survived. Moshe made a decision here. You call this a chait? Let's analyze it. Moshe made a decision here. He will not participate in any further selections between Tzadik and Rasha. He will not give them to drink. This whole Ada will go into Eretz Yisrael. Not now, in the 40th year, will he have half the Ada die. Imagine the loss of morale. Imagine the sense of hopelessness and depression of the survivors again. It's too much. Moshe wanted this whole Ada to enter Eretz Yisrael. But he didn't have to be afraid. He could have trusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the oath L'Bnei Meri that when they see the Mateh, they will come to their senses and stop rebelling. So why would Hashem want them to drink? To show that unlike 40 years ago where half of the Ada was found guilty and died, this Ada will drink and all be meritorious. And Moshe will see how far we've come. But Moshe didn't trust Klal Yisrael. And because he wasn't sure that they would be able to survive this challenge, he made the ultimate sacrifice. He ensured that they would enter Eretz Yisrael, but he traded places with them, and he would not enter Eretz Yisrael. Which is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, you won't bring these people into Eretz Yisrael. He wanted them to enter at all costs. Now, if you look at the Pasuk, he didn't give them water. Vayetsu mayim rabim. A lot of water came out, and vatesh ta'eda, and they all drank, and he didn't give it to them, and that was the end of it. Notice, my grandfather points this out, that in the beginning it says, you shall give them to drink, and their animals. Now, distinction. They're guilty, and this water will create a selection between them, but their animals are not guilty, so just, that's natural. You give the animals to drink. But here, there was no distinction between the people and the animals. They all drank together. Nobody, there was no separate arrangement. The people will drink this way and the animals will drink that way. They all drank together. There was no selection. Here, Hashem says to them, Yan lo hemantem bi, you did not have trust in me. Trust in me that I trusted Klal Yisrael. And had you trusted me, that they would all, that their rebellion would subside, you could have created a huge Kiddush Hashem, which we will now talk about. But before we talk about this, you have to go back and look in Shemos, Perek Dalet Pasuk Aleph, because as we said, every word here, the inferences here, are what are so critical in understanding the story. Perek, page 306. When Hashem first chose Moshe and gave him the job of going to speak to the Jewish people, to speak to them, look at the words, look at the similarity. Here we have Ya'an lo he'emantem bi. Ya'an, because you want to say, you did not believe in me. Early on in the beginning of Moshe's job as Shaliach, Moshe says, Vaya'an Moshe, same word. Vayomer, and he said, Hein lo yaminu li. They won't believe me. When Moshe said to Hashem, Vaya'an, there's no mistake here, no coincidence. When Moshe was afraid that the people wouldn't believe him when he came to the people with this message that they're going to be redeemed, what did Hashem tell him to do? Pasuk Gimel. Maze biyadecha. What's in your hand? Vayomer mata. Hashem said, take the matah. Now, this is a different matah, but let's be careful. When Moshe first was sent, he didn't trust that Klal Yisrael would listen to him. And he had a good reason not to trust them. And you know what? They shouldn't have listened to him. He was right. They had no business listening to him when he came and he said, I speak for God. God is coming to redeem you. And the reason they had no business listening to him, and we've learned this, is because never before Moshe had there ever been in the history of life on this earth a Navi sent to convey a message to people. Anytime Hashem spoke to anyone, it was a private affair. No one ever was given the role of messenger to others. And why should people believe that God spoke to you? In fact, Hashem didn't even expect them to believe that that God spoke to Moshe, because remember what Hashem said? He said, you're going to come back here by the Sneh, and you're going to serve Hashem on this mountain. And when the people hear me speak to you, then they're really going to trust you. But until that time, they're going to go on like a pretty good assumption that Hashem is speaking to you, but not total trust. But when they come to Har Sinai and actually hear me speak to you, v'gam b'cha yaminu la'olam, then they're going to trust you forever. So Moshe was right in the beginning when he said, why should they trust me? It's never happened before. Why would they? So Hashem said, you're right. They will not be able to be convinced strictly by your words. Not yet. So here's a backup measure. Take the matah, and you're going to start doing nisim, osos. You're going to start doing miracles. You're going to make the blood turn, the river turn to blood, and the stick turn to a snake, and your hand go become leprous, and take it out. It won't be leprous, tzaras, right? So he gave him the matah. So in the beginning of Moshe's career, there was a matah, and that matah was used for people that, like children, were not yet ready to follow Moshe out of conviction. So they had to follow Moshe out of compulsion. They were compelled by the power and the awe of the miracles that Moshe did with the matah. So what we see is in the beginning of their development, they were like little children. You don't rationalize with children, explain to them abstract concepts. You compel them by force, which is visible, and you make them demonstrable, you know, signs of truth and power, and you teach them by practical methods, not by complicated ideas. But as the child develops and becomes sophisticated, there eventually becomes a point where they transition and they stop following the instructions of the teacher or the master because they're forced to, and because there's overwhelming signs and miracles, but because the words, the ideas are true, and that pulls them. They are drawn after the ideas. The words themselves. Klal Yisrael had also changed in 40 years. They weren't any more the people that were needed to rely solely on miracles, open miracles, to ensure that God was with them. they were transitioning to a state of greater maturity, where when Moshe would speak, and the Nevi'im that would follow Moshe would speak, the strength of the ideas of the leaders of the Nevi'im, the Nevi'os that would follow this, that would now begin to develop in the history of the Jewish people, the ideas would be what pulled Klal Yisrael after them, and not big, huge miracles anymore. Look, basically what we're saying is, the age of the Mate, of the open miracles, was coming to an end. The age of the Anane HaKavod, and the Be'er, and all the Nisim that Moshe did with his Mate, and the Mon. The era of open miracles was coming to an end. The era of open miracles was coming to an end, and the first indication of that was the Be'er closed up. So that meant, and this Rav Huttner explains, that it wasn't that they were abandoned by God and God wasn't giving them water anymore. Now they would have to access the Mayim Chayim, the life-giving waters, not through miracles and a staff, but through the words of their leaders and their prophets would lead them and allow them to drink from the well of the living waters. The words, the Koach HaDibor was taking over. It was the era of the spoken word was beginning. When they would enter into Eretz Yisrael, it would be a life of more b'derech ha-teva, natural. And their leaders would be the Nevi'im, eventually a king, first Shoftim, but their spiritual leaders would, the legacy of Moshe, be the prophets and the prophetesses. And that would have to convince them and compel them to follow the ways of Hashem without big miracles. The era of the Mate was closing. The era of speech was beginning, of Dibur. And remember, Dibur, which comes from the mind and the mouth, is a much more removed and abstract and higher madriga than action. Right? When Hashem created man, before man was created, all of the Bria in Perek Aleph is Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Hashem. It's Amira, it's speech that brought the world into creation. Yes, in this world we have the Olam Hamasa, the world of action. But that's the most tangible, but it's also the most basic, the most simple level of behavior. But we know that Hashem doesn't require simply proper actions, because a person can act properly and have all kinds of completely, heretical or spiteful or all kinds of thoughts in their heads which are the antithesis of the behavior that they might at this moment be expressing. Hashem doesn't search out just our actions. Actions are animals can mimic actions. Everybody can mimic actions, do actions. It doesn't talk about the soul, the heart, and the mind. Hashem is searching for our emotions. What's going on in the head, the machshava. Now, which one is more abstract? It's the machshava in a person's mind. It's the ideas in a person's mind that draws the person, not necessarily the action. When we move backwards, away from action, from osos and mofs and miracles and huge displays of God's power, to the spoken word of the Navi, we're not getting further from God. We're not being abandoned when Miriam's well dries up. We're being asked to access that Mayim Chayim a different way, without the miracles, just with their minds, with their kavana, with their understanding, like a more mature person. We're not getting further from the ideal. We're actually getting closer to the ideal, moving into the age of the spoken word, of the ideas. But the Jewish people were afraid. They didn't understand this, perhaps. They were afraid of this. It's hard to abandon as a little child, sent off now on their own to live up to their parents' expectations without their parents around, without the rewards, without the punishments, and the incentives, just remembering what it is their parents want from them, what is the path their parents set them on, just keeping that in their head, like Yosef when he almost sinned, and then he remembered his father and the ways of his father's house, right? So here, there's a transition. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what's happening. They're rebelling. They're afraid of the loss of the water. What does Hashem want to teach them? That the Koach HaDibor is stronger than the Koach of the open miracles. It should be stronger. So he says to Moshe, take the Mateh from Aaron's, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and hold it up. That's step number one, to tell them to get to the, come to their senses, stop rebelling. But they're nervous. They think they've been abandoned. Now you have to teach them it's not abandonment. It's a whole new era is beginning, the era of the power of the word. So what you're going to do is you're not going to hit the rock like last time. You're going to speak to the rock. And that's a mushel, that if a rock can respond to the spoken word, how much more so can Klal Yisrael now lift themselves up, strengthen themselves, not be afraid of the loss of all the miracles, and know that they too can follow the leadership of the word, of the Navi, of the prophet, of the ideas, not to be afraid of the loss of the miracles, the loss of the clear, obvious incentives. Like a child, the loss, you, when a child is young, you give them candy and prizes, but that goes away, and then it's just, you just, they just have the satisfaction of knowing that they pleased you, that they impressed you. But not to be afraid of the loss of all the incentives. So first step, take the matzah so they'll settle down. And then talk to the rock. And you're going to talk to the rock. And they're going to see the power of the koach hadibur. And then you're going to give them to drink. And here you'll see that they're all zakai, they're all meritorious. They'll all survive. And this will bring Klal Yisrael to the next madrega, and it's a madrega of higher kedusha, because it's more removed from the physical. It's mufrash. It's more removed. It's about the thought, the speech, the word, everything that's abstract. So Moshe here doesn't want to take the risk that when he gives them to water, maybe to drink, some won't be meritorious. So he hits the rock. He goes back to the era of the Osos and the Mofsim, back to that dramatic display of Hashem's might. And what's lost? What's lost is now, and this seems to be a terrible loss for Klal Yisrael, they have less ability to be drawn after the power of the word, because they didn't see the rock responding. It's more than just they didn't see the rock responding. So Rav Huttner points out this. There are two different types of nisim, which we started out in the beginning discussing, asking the question. There's the nace, which is the nace of tzaddik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. A tzaddik needs something, he wants teva to change at this particular moment for a particular need, and it does. And we've spoken about that too. Nature responding to the needs of man, if man is righteous. That's tzaddik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. That type of nace doesn't change anything in the cosmos. It's just a momentary response of nature to the needs of a tzaddik. That's it. It comes and it goes and it serves a purpose. Those are not the nisim of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is not in the, Moshe did no nisim in this category up till now. Every nace that Moshe did was a nace that changed the spiritual teva that had been operative until that point. In other words, when there was Malchus Bechoros, that was not tzadik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim, that somebody needed something so Hashem helped him out. That created a change in the fundamental nature, the underpinnings of the way this world works from here on in, b'ni b'chori Yisrael. It established a rule that my b'chor is Klal Yisrael. Okay? Everything changed from that point on. If Moshe would have spoken to the rock, of Huttner says, then in the cosmos, in the spiritual world, Klal Yisrael would have had been given at this moment from that experience a special power to be drawn after the words of the Navi, based on the rock's example of it. If Moshe had done that kind of nace, it wasn't a nace that he needed something to happen, so he did a, you know, did something. That was one of the nisim of Moshe Rabbeinu, like splitting the sea and the 10 plagues. All those nisim that Moshe did changed the world. In other words, what you really learn, this is another whole long discussion, that Moshe's prophecy, the words Moshe said, which brought new realities into the world, and Moshe's nisim, the nisim Moshe did, are all the same. They're all in the same category. They changed the reality of the world. After Moshe spoke, so that was the new reality. When Moshe said, B'ni b'chori Yisrael, and is speaking on behalf of Hashem, so that was the truth. That became emes. That changed in the world. And if Moshe would have spoken to the rock, then the koach hamshacha, the power to be drawn after the word, would have been strengthened in Klal Yisrael. But he didn't do that. Instead, what did Moshe do? He did the other kind of nes. Tzadik gozer v'kadosh baruch hu makayim. He said, give me water with this when I hit the rock. So Hashem did it because he was a tzadik. He gave Moshe what he wanted. But it could have been a completely different kind of a nes. That was the loss. And that's why Hashem said to him, Yan lo hemantem bi. You, just like you said, vehein lo yaminu bi, and I gave you the mate, because then you were right. They weren't ready to follow your word. So you needed the stick to show them tricks, like a child. But they've changed. And now, just the word alone is sufficient for them. But you are still assuming that they're in that place in their minds where they still need the mate. So you used Aaron's mate the way you were never supposed to use Aaron's mate that way. They didn't need it. It wasn't what Aaron's mate was for. By the way, this sin was called a me'ila. Ma'altem, the word me'ila is very specific. It's when you take something designated for one purpose and you use it for another purpose. That is called a me'ilah. If you take a korban designated for the Beis HaMikdash and you use it for something else, there's a certain kind of avera called a me'ilah. And what Moshe did here was a me'ilah. He used Aaron's mate for an undesignated purpose. And that purpose was that he felt they still needed to see the signs of Hashem's power. He was afraid to trust them to follow the Koach HaDibur. So Hashem says, Ya'an lo hemantem bi, just like you said, heim lo yaminu bi, but they do. You didn't have trust in me, and my trust, not you didn't trust I can do miracles, you didn't trust in my trust of Klal Yisrael. And if you would have, you would have created higher Kedusha. What type of Kedusha? That they would have been already on a level where they were removed from the more practical demonstrations of Hashem's power, and would respond with conviction to the words, the ideas of the Navi. That's a higher level of Kedusha. And then he says to him, but you got what you wanted. You will not bring Klal Yisrael into the Midbar, but Klal Yisrael will go into the Eretz Yisrael. But, here he says here, but he says, you will not bring them in. Ki lo yavo el ha'aretz asher nasati levnei Yisrael. You will not come into the land, right? Because you rebelled against me, but they will come into Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's interesting as a proof to this, my grandfather points out something striking. On Hoshana Rabbah, when we're begging for pity and mercy, right, for ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We know we say Slichas all the way through Rosh Hashanah, we start before Rosh Hashanah, all the way to Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah is the last day, right, the end of Sukkot, where it's like we still have a chance to reverse the Gezerah, if God forbid it's not positive for us. So Hoshana Rabbah, people stay up all night and say Slichas. It's their last chance. So we pull out all the stops here. We ask for every merit conceivable on Hoshana Rabbah. And here's one of the... We recall the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. And here are the words. B'yom Hoshana Rabbah, we say, save us, leman ne'man bayis, on behalf of, in the merit of, the one who is called ne'man bayis, the most trusted in my house. Remember Hashem said to Miriam, behold, Basi Nemanu, in my whole house, he's the most trusted. This is a reference to Moshe. Leman Neman Bayis, Maspik La'amayim, who provided water for the nation. Selahach, he hit the rock. Vayazovu Mayim, the water was released. Vahoshienu Kel Me'uzenu, so you Hashem also save us. In the Zechus of Moshe, who hit the rock, thereby saving the Jews, used to Hashem should save us. We actually invoke this incident of Mei Meriva, where Moshe hit the rock, as the greatest zechus that we can imagine. So in the way Moshe hit the rock and thereby saved Klal Yisrael, you too have Rachmanus and save Klal Yisrael. You hear this? My grandfather points this out. It's striking. In addition, he said, we also say here, we say Leman Aaron, we're talking about Aaron, Poked B'mei Merivas Mayim, and the Zechus of Aaron, on behalf of Aaron, who is designated in the story of Mei Meriva. We're asking for Zechus because of Aaron and his behavior at Mei Meriva. Now, what was Aaron's Mei Meriva? That it was his staff. And Moshe was not supposed to use it to hit the rock. They knew this was a Me'ila, a misuse of a Devar that was Hektish, that was Kodesh. There's a big risk to take. And Moshe, in agreement with Aaron, hit the rock, misusing the Mateh, and all of this on behalf of avoiding a selection that they were feared would be was what was about to happen. So are we speaking about a failure, God forbid, of leadership? Moshe has a temper tantrum in the 40th year. Only if you read the words carefully, if you see the references and the inferences that Torah is making, can you begin to understand what was happening here. Is it possible that Moshe made a mistake? It seems clear that he did. He didn't go into Eretz Yisrael because of this. A huge sacrifice, tremendous sacrifice for him. And what was his mistake? That he perhaps didn't trust Klal Yisrael's development enough. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu trusted our development. So you have a leader who was so concerned with the status of his people and perhaps didn't realize how far they came. Maybe because he saw them all through the years. Maybe because this was too reminiscent of the complaints of 40 years ago. And how could it be starting again after all this time and all these nisim again with the lack of security? Remember when Amalek came? Because Bnei Yisrael said way in the beginning, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayin, is God really with us? The lack of trust that they deserved it. Continuously lack of trust in themselves and Hashem's presence among them. And after all these years, still not fearing, not trusting that Hashem was among them. And as we said, what this really comes down to is something we all experience, which is there comes a point in a person's life where nobody will force them to do anything anymore. Nobody will give them prizes and hit them or reward them for doing the right thing. There comes a point in a person's life where if the ideas that have been taught to them are not enough to draw them after the truth, if they can't pull themselves to change and to behave according to the ideas that they've heard, then the lack truly does lie with them and their fortitude and their strength. And Klal Yisrael, like everybody, was at a point, a transition point, and what was incumbent upon them is to know that without all the clear and obvious demonstrations of Hashem's presence among them, the fact that there was a Navi among them, that they had a Torah and mitzvos to guide them, that was enough. And though it was more abstract, that was going to be what they were expected to find, you know, to find the strength and to follow. And the same thing with us. We don't have, people say all the time, God, if you're here, do me a miracle and then I'll believe in you. But it doesn't go like that. So is that an excuse that then we shouldn't have trust that we can be great and that we can live up to Hashem's expectations? No. Hashem has given us, now we have Sfarim, endless Sfarim of Torah and Neviim and Ksuvim and telling us what to do and what's expected of us. And no, we're not going to get signs and miracles to push us along. It doesn't work like that. Maybe Nes Nister here and there, but not in a big way. It's up to us to push ourselves. But when a parent stops giving a child all these incentives, it doesn't mean that parents stop loving the child. It means a parent is telling the child, now I trust you to do this on your own, to live up to everything. It's not that I don't love you, that's why I'm not giving you chocolate bars anymore. We've reached the next stage. I trust you to become everything you are meant to become based on your own inner conviction and your inner strength. It's a sign of progress. It's a good thing. But it's also something that we're sometimes afraid of. So this is something we can all relate to. In any case, what we end up with here is just a greater also appreciation of who Moshe Rabbeinu was. And I guess you have to say that had he not done this, it's difficult to say this, but Klal Yisrael would have had more spiritual powers, perhaps. That there was a great Moshe's sacrifice on behalf of the nation did come at a cost, and therefore it now became the job of the later Nevi'im to try to strengthen the people and bring them back to that level that was missed at that time. Okay, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome.